left off in the previous year, we were discussing the issues of Kareya and Topher, and particularly how they relate to issues such as diapers, such as Band-Aids, was we spent a lot of time focusing on the Eino Kayama part. That was the primary hat there. We had to fine-tune a little bit what Eino Kayama means. And always in the back of our mind, we're a little bit plagued with the fear that we're not even sure that this kula is even right, because the whole Eino Kayama story by Kareya and Topher is shaky, is machlokes rishonim, even though we probably accept it, but definitely not pasha. So maybe we can almost go down a little bit of a different route as we approach the issue of the diapers and the Band-Aids. Maybe we can almost fall back on a little bit of a different kula. In addition, I'm not trying to unravel everything that we said last week. Maybe we can add, like we say in your day, there's a kind of adding like a sniff. Like, it's mutter for this reason, and Ayj Shlomer, it's mutter for that reason, and Ayj Shlomer, it's mutter for another reason. It's very good in both in halacha and in life to take that kind of attitude, because sometimes we make mistakes. So when we build in, in a sense, safety valves into our decision-making process, so there's always, just in case X breaks down, so then Y is still okay. And in case Y breaks down, Z is still okay. So again, this is just common sense in terms of all safety nets. And this is, of course, true in terms of the halacha as well. So when we approach the sugya of ripping things and unripping things and fastening things together, so, we have this very, very serious, in a sense, concern in front of our eyes. We have a potential shaz of their eyes, of Kareya and Topher. And as the Rambam tells us, medabik niyaros, person sticks together papers with a glue-like substance, even though there's no thread and no needle or anything like that. We're dealing with the potential deraisa, and medabik ben and mafri ben aniyaros is potential deraisa. So we would definitely feel more comfortable. We had a little bit of more of a safety net to fall, a little bit more cushion to fall back on. So a whole group of posts can suggest a little bit of a different approach to the modern-day issues of Kareya and Topher as relates to the Band-Aids, etc., Band-Aids and diapers, based on the following. But the Aruch HaShulchan already raises this issue, and others probably before him raised the issue. When the Rambam speaks about Medabik ben Aniyara, Medabik Aniyaras, or Mafri ben Aniyaras, there's a certain imagery of Devek. Devek, it means glue. Let's not kid ourselves. The Rambam was not opening up Pampers. Rambam wasn't opening up Band-Aids. Rambam was describing papers that are glued together, mamish. Now the question is, where do you draw the line? At what point do you say this is glue and this is just a mere adhesive tape? It's not really a glue. I mean, at the end of the day, it's sticking together. If you don't yank apart the diaper will stay the old bud. I mean, if you buy a box of Pampers that have been sitting on the shelf for 30 years, the diapers didn't open up. So it's not going anywhere until someone's going to actually open them up. So where do you draw the line? What's called midabik ben yaros, and maybe what falls a little bit short? So the Chashulchan already has this idea in the sugya of Kareya of Topher that almost like the original imagery of Kofer, say Kareya and Topher together, get a Kofer. So if you look almost like, if you envision for a moment the imagery of Kareya, so you have that imagery of like, it's like a tailor sitting there and he's, I made a bad stitch. He yanks it apart. There's like a pulling, there's like a ripping, there's like, there's something like, you don't even necessarily always rip in the right place. Like the very malach of Kareya has an indication of a little bit of an oomph to it, a little bit of a sweat to it, a little bit of an effort to it. And it may not even break so easily, and you may end up with a little bit more rip, and then you have to resew it, and you have to rip it again, and you have to resew it. That's almost like what the imagery of Kareya is all about. If you have a Kareya where the two things are quote-unquote connected, but they are so easily taken apart that you don't even have to concentrate. I'm on the phone, I'm talking to somebody else, and I'm just opening up the adhesive of the diaper. You don't need all that much energy and effort to open up a diaper. And not only do you not need energy and effort, but it's not going to rip apart. Nothing's going to happen. I mean, unless you're a total klutz, your diaper's not going to rip apart. You just simply peel away the tape. One could argue, that's not Kareya. That is not the tzur of Kareya. Kareya means when you rip it apart in such a way that the items become ripped apart. It's not a controlled opening. There even some want to bring a raya. If you think about it, every kosher should ultimately be, every matir should ultimately be an act of Kareya. Because I am ripping apart the different parts of the rope that were tied together. So I had these strings that were tied as a knot, and now I'm undoing them why is it every undoing considered to be malacha of kereya? So the answer may be, says the Aruch HaShulchan, because when you're undoing a knot, you're undoing it in a controlled setting. When you're ripping, you're just gritting your teeth, closing it, that's what ripping is. It's that uncontrolled destruction that's much closer to the to what the malacha of kareya is all about. If one buys into that idea, so that would be a whole other angle as to why to be megal and many bad things. The medabik niyaros and the mafri ben niyaros at the vukim of the Rambam is not really relevant in our cases. It's not. It's relevant if you take two pieces of paper and use crazy glue, and then in the process of ripping them apart, you rip half the paper also. That's called kareya. But when you very, very gently, softly peel off an adhesive tab off a diaper, maybe that's not called kareya altogether. So we always have like two different approaches of how to avoid issues of kareya and toifer. Either you go down the route of kayama, and eno kayama, that was last week's shiur, with all the necessary details that have to be analyzed. Number one, is there such a kulat? Like the Rishon, how do you define kayama? Based on you, based on the Yolam, based on manufacturing and all the nuances that we spoke about in great detail last week. Now we have a whole other angle. It's almost like it reminds us of the Beis HaLevi. Somebody once asked the Beis HaLevi, the Chaim's father, they asked the Beis HaLevi that how come when you give a teretz to Akasha, so well, like nobody else has another teretz anymore. It's over, the game's over. So Beis HaLevi explained, it wasn't speaking about himself per se, he just explained, he gave a brisket vart. The Beis HaLevi was pre-brisk, which was Chaim's father, but I guess he had the seeds of brisket ready in him. So Beis HaLevi said, there are two different ways to answer a question. You can answer a question by acknowledging the truth of the question, but the question is a good question, it's a true question, but it happens to be that we can finagle our way out and come up with a pesat teretz in the kasha. Or sometimes you can answer a question by showing that the question was fundamentally flawed, that there was a fundamental premise about the question that just wasn't true. And it's not a teretz to kasha. It's a statement that there was never a question in the first place. So basically Levi said that when you give the first malach, when you give a teretz to the kasha, you acknowledge the kasha, and someone can argue, well, I don't think it's a good teretz. So if I don't think it's a good teretz, then kush mekor el isas, then the kush is already there. If you undermine the very question, so then there's nothing to discuss, and the game's over. So the same thing over here, that last week's shiur was going down the analytical approach of, we acknowledge that we have an issue of karei here, and now we're searching for a solution. Maybe the solution lies in a shokhayama. So that forces us to search in other malachas and see, can we extrapolate a shokhayama? It forces us to go to all kind of wild sugyas and shas about the Sola Zozo falling down a cliff and sugyas and maseches sukkah about lulav to try to tell us some details, what is called kayama, what's not called kayama. According to the malach we're going now is that we don't have to discuss kayama because, quite frankly, we're not even talking about kareya. We're not even talking about teifer. There's nothing to talk about. If there's nothing to talk, if there's no question, then there's no necessity to give an answer. So a couple of them, going back to what we spoke about in the past year in Kabbalah, what we have now, we have a few tzadim halacha, a little bit more comfort zone in terms of the sugya, in terms of the kireya. But Moshe Feinstein invoked this imagery that we're mentioning now, the name of the Aruch HaShulchan. Moshe invoked this idea also, this notion that kareya and teifer require almost like an uncontrolled kind of a ripping, in the sense of that something's going to really, really, really get almost like destroyed in the process. Just a mere, very, very neat, easy separating of two things is not necessarily kareya altogether. Moshe used this as part of a discussion that's already been going on for hundreds of years in terms of using pins, using safety pins on Shabbos. Is there anything wrong with using pins or safety pins, anything like that, on Shabbos? There was a big chumrah that was suggested already several hundred years ago by some of the Acharonim that safety pins, pinning up two pieces of material together, is a potential shav deraisa. It's a shav deraisa of teifer, because mali, if I take stitches and I stitch up material, mali, if I take a pin and I pin the two pieces together, that's all considered to be the same malacha of teifer, and then to undo them would be a malacha of kereya. And many, many poskim disagree. So again, you have the same pismin. There's some poskim who said, well, it depends. Are you doing it with Torahs? You know, is it kayama, not kayama? And then you have to figure out, does it meet the criteria of kayama, etc. And then others, like Ramesha, said, no, maybe the whole thing is not right. Maybe the whole model, the whole imagery of kareya and teifer doesn't really apply to pins. Pins are a very, very controlled experiment that you just simply undo the pin and you take the piece apart. If by undoing the pin and taking the piece apart, you rip the entire thing, then I would tell you to stay off, let your wife undo your safety pins for you. It means a normal person undoes a safety pin and sure, nothing was destroyed, nothing was ripped. It was very, very controlled kind of an experiment. So Rav Moshe uses that as a tzadl hokel against the machmirim who didn't approve of the using of pins on Shabbos. Then Rav Moshe says another important svara in the Malach of Kereya and Teifer, which will become relevant for other things as well. Rav Moshe says that the very Malach of Kereya and Teifer, those Malachas, are assuming that two things merge to become one unit. And that's a critical in Rav Moshe's thought about Kereya and Teifer, that there's a merging, there's a fusing into a unit together. That could be part of the reason why the answer to the question we mentioned before, why isn't every kosher teifer, why isn't every matah kareya? So it could be because that's not called the fusion together. How do you fuse two items into one? So that was like the lab of Yaakov Avinu. We've said this over in Drush many times. That when the Medrash, the beginning of Parshat Vayetze, speaks about Yaakov took 12 stones and he eventually slept with one stone. So Chazal already sensitive to the fact, was it 12 or was it 1? So Chazal said, well, it was 12, but the 12 became 1. So many all the Darshanim, Pashat V'Yetz, will talk about this. That was ultimately part of the challenge of Yaakov Avinu's life. This is a beautiful imagery. This is a beautiful allegory for ultimately what Yaakov Avinu was struggling, and particularly at this time, and he's about to embark on Beis Lavan, and he knew that part of the game plan was now to begin to raise a family. So he had to deal with this imagery of taking 12 and turning it into 1, because on the one hand, the 12 are different, people are different. People are different from one another, and different as children. Each one of them was a shevet, and each one of them had their own kochos. And he had a tremendous, tafkir in front of him to try to merge them and fuse them into one working, cohesive unit. So that's a very, very difficult challenge. This is not a time to talk about the government system of the United States. It's not really our sugi right now, but this has been an issue that has been on the table since the days of the founding fathers. So how do you take fundamentally different units? Then it was 13, and now it's 50. How do you take fundamentally different units of states and combine them to make them United States? So yeah, it's a very, very delicate balance. On the one hand, you don't want to have everybody doing for themselves. Ish kol yashiv b'yas each state, and around, then you're not a United States of America. Then you're just Mississippi is a country before that's going. New York's a country, a Florida country. So that's on the one. On the other hand, there is a certain degree of autonomy if you want to give the states. Again, this is not a time for a sheer clawly right now on the different approaches to the Constitution, whether you're in favor of a stronger federal government or not. There's nothing to do with policies right now. But that dilemma exists in life. Whenever you have these kinds of conglomerates where you're dealing with on the one hand, the different parts, the different components. On the other hand, they do subscribe to a certain central mission. How do you walk that tightrope? How do you create that? So this challenge is older books. This is Yaakov Avinu's challenge. And again, this is something that we constantly face, both as individuals and on a communal level. How do you walk that balance in terms of striking the proper chord in terms of that balance? But getting back to that story, so Rav Moshe says that part of the malachas of Kareya and Teifer were the same idea that it's the merging, it's the fusing together that really, undoing the fusion is the malacha of Kareya. So it could be that's why kosher and tofer are not really that. Kosher and tofer are not really a fusion in the first place. They really merged, never really lost their identity in the first place. At what point do we say that something loses its identity and now becomes merged together? That's also a very, very tricky kind of a call. So this is very, very hard for us to make those calls. This is what Chazal did all day. When they discussed the Shabbos, the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us the basic cloud of the Shabbos and gave us the understanding and how to begin to apply these rules. And now Chazal have to sit around and try to figure out, does this particular action really, really fall under the category of Kareya or not? Is it similar to Kareya? Is it not similar to Kareya? And you may have different days about this. So this again, this Kachitara, Kachitara, Shotara. That's Ki Palim Mimcha Davala Mishpat. That's exactly what we've been doing for the last 3,500 years since the days of Yomazah Bami Bar Sinai. So we came to our Sinai today, 3,000 plus years ago. That's exactly what our charge and mission is. Is to take the Hashem, to take the all the dinim, all the psukim, and all the dinim deraisa, and all the drushes, and to try to figure out what's going on, what's the understanding, madama milsim, try to understand how to apply the Torah in its proper manner. That's exactly what the Kodesh Baruch Hu gave to us. That's our goal in this world, to try to understand and to implement the dinya Torah in a proper manner. So over here, it's very, very tricky. Where do you draw the line? So The Gemara only speaks about tofer by stitches. So the Rambam had a very, very deep understanding of tofer. The Rambam took care of it. The Rambam had called dark glue in front of him. So the Rambam looked at glue and he said, you know what? Glue is also, it was also called the merging and the blending and the chubayachad together. I'm not saying that anyone does disagree with the Rambam. We don't find anyone disagrees with Rambam, but I can hear somebody arguing. I can hear somebody saying that maybe no, maybe glue does not create that tefira, doesn't create that kind of a chibur. It's interesting, there is another area of halacha, totally unrelated area of halacha, where there's a very, very important shaila with a glue. What is the role of glue? Is glue something that can, when two things are glued together, do they become one unit or they fundamentally still remain as two separate and distinct units? So that's a very, very important shaila chus tefillin. Because we spoke about this sometime in the past, that in order for tefillin shel rosh to be acceptable, you have to be me'or echad. The Gemara tells us that you have to have four separate compartments. It's not like the shel yad, because the Torah describes them as being tatafos, so they have to be four. But on the other hand, it has to be uzi karabin and echad. So you have to, it has to be one also. It's the same Yaakov Avinu saga. How do you have one that's four? How do you have four that's one? So there's a big challenge. So the tefillin shel rosh are a big, big challenge. They have to be four separate batim, but yet they have to be one bais together. So that's what the Gemara describes in the Seches Benachos. They have to be made or echad. They have to be halachically considered to be one unit, one piece of leather. So that's a big, big machlokes poskim. What does that mean? Does one piece of leather mean that it's naturally one piece of leather? That's from the same animal, the same piece. It's just that it was formed through a mold into four separate compartments. Is that what Zikar Min HaNecha means? Or maybe Zikar Min HaNecha means you can take four separate pieces of skin, could be from four different animals, who cares, and just glue them together and show you. It's been one mold. Devek is a chibur. Devek creates a chibur. Or maybe that chibur can create it through tefiras, through stitching. So that's why for many, many years, there were many, many pairs of tefillin that were made with that assumption. These were the older kind of tefillin. Probably some of the kids wouldn't even know what I'm talking about, but I'm sure some of the old timers, and went over the age of, I don't want to tell you what's considered to be the age for this, but some of you may remember that some of the lesser quality, lesser high quality tefillin that was around not all that long ago were what we call, they weren't really Me'or Echad. They were Me'or Echad based on Devek. They were glued together in order to create an Or Echad. So that was a big machlokes. So the meaning in Europe was to be Mekel on that Shaila. Over the years, we've kind of steered away from those pairs of tefillin, not only because they're questionable in terms of the Or Echad, it could be a Mikra Din that is considered to be Or Echad. We don't want to be Motzi Las on some of the older tefillin, but just the quality was significantly lower. Baruch Hashem, one of the big advantages in today's world in making tefillin, we have a lot more technology that wasn't so available in Europe. So we were able to do certain things in Uchus tefillin, certain Hidurim, and certain Hidurim, both in terms of Shittas and Halacha, and Hidurim in terms of making them look nicer, in terms of having them last longer, and not having to always constantly, having to fix them. So we have certain advantages that maybe didn't exist. It doesn't in any shape or form mean that the last door was the tefillin apostle, not in the slightest. We're saying that again, as we've said many, many times, in terms of halacha, the basics of halacha remain fundamentally the same. How to implement it, what technology, what ability, what financial ability you have, what practical ability you have in terms of performing mitzvahs. So we've given the moshel hundreds of times that the sukkah of Moshe Rabbeinu with the branches and leaves, Pi Halacha, is identical to the sukkah of mine with the fiberglass walls and bamboo poles. It's the same halachic sukkah. Is it the same? Moshe Rabbeinu look at my bamboo, unless he knew bamboo comes from China, he would have the same reaction that my grandmother had when she first saw it, that where's the schach? So that's true also. So the tefillin are the same. The tefillin are the same. There are nuances and differences and slightly nuanced how we do it. So one of the things that has become very, very prevalent today is that the tefillins we've steered away from that model of doing Or Echad based on mere glue for halachic reasons, technical reasons, etc. But we're not being mighty laws on that. We're just saying that it's much more practical and better for us to do it in a little bit of a different style today, which was probably more in sync with actually the way it used to be done. The way that Rashi describes, what Ram describes, and Rishon actually described the walking through the making of the bathroom. So it's a little bit closer model to what we're doing than what was being done sometimes, because it was just difficult to pull off the way we do it today. But getting back to that story, so even in Uchus Tefillin, the Poskim use have a whole discussion, is Devek a Chibur, is Devek not a Chibur, is Tefira a Chibur, is it not a Chibur? That's an important area of Halacha. There is a Chivas Chalam Seifer, when he discusses glue and tefillin, a little bit of a different angle, the glue and tefillin, another aspect of the Shaila. So the Zerach Chalam Seifer writes, Omala Debek Lo Tovu. He says, Debek is not so good. It's a, he's a play on the Pasuk. You have to first know the Pasuk exists and then know that what the Chalam Seifer's joke was. The Pasuk says, Omala Lo Debek Tovu. So he said, no, it's really Omala Debek Lo Tovu. He said, it's not so good. It's not such a good idea to put the Debek, put the glue into the tefillin. But whatever it is, not for now. So Ramosha develops this idea that in order for Tefir and Kareah, Tef and Kareah to be real issues, there has to be this degree of Chibur. I thought it was so clear, you know, at what point we have that idea of Chibur that's mamish music, fusing together. So Ramosha thought that perhaps the pins don't really have that aspect, and therefore the pins are less of a problem. This is part of Ramosha's theory about zippers also. Zipper was also a big issue. A zipper is considered to be a concern of Tef and Kareah altogether. So again, you had the same two kinds of approaches. You had some posts who said that fundamentally zippers are a problem. The other thing is you can go with the rules of Eino Shechayama, which again, if you're zippering your pants every morning and unzippering, you take a nap or something, so then it's going to be pretty Eino Shechayama. But if the only reason why you're willing to be not the zippering is based on Eino Shechayama, then you may have concerns with certain things. Let's say, for example, you have a raincoat. A lot of people have linings in their raincoat. So sometimes, you know, you had your lining in for a few weeks and it's cold outside, and now it's pouring rain in the middle of July. You want to put a raincoat on, but you're not particularly interested in your winter lining. So you want to unzip that lining. Now, that lining's been in for the last 3 months. So one could argue, maybe that's not called Eino Shechayama anymore. Maybe that would pose a problem. Or if you want to make it even more, you know, close to home, about a talus bag. So if you have the same talus bag every day, you close the unclosing, closing, unclosing. But what if it's a Shabbos talus? And a Shabbos talus, generally speaking, you only, by its kishmar kenu, you only unzip it once a week. So here I want to unzip my Shabbos talus, Shabbos morning. When was the last time that talus bag was zipped? 6.5 days ago, right after Havdalah. So maybe that would also pose a problem. So if you're going to go down the route of Eino Shechayama, you're going to run into some possible scenarios where zippering may be problematic. If you go down the other route, that zippering is not in the ballpark. It's not even the parsha of Kareah and Tefer. Either, as far as we said, because when you open and close the zipper, unless the zipper is broken, it's not going to destroy the whole thing. It's not going to rip it literally apart. Or, like Ramosha is saying, that maybe zippering is not really emerging and fusing together, so that and that would be okay. Like Ramosha gives a marshal, says, why is it different than buttoning? We have yet to hear any bit of a chumrah buttoning. You can't button a jacket on Shabbos. But the answer is that that's not really, I'm not doing anything. I'm not connecting the two things. They're two parts of the same, two sides of the jacket, that there's a little bit of a button connecting them. That's why most of the poskim are very makil on the Velcro kinds of shilas, because Velcro is almost like buttoning. It's a billion little hooks and you know, that connect the two pieces together. It's not really a merging. It's not really a connecting in the sense of becoming one unit. So again, this is an ongoing discussion about many of these kinds of things, and the fundamental issues that are involved are the issue of Eino Shechayama. You're going down that route, and you have to define it in great detail, like we spent last week doing. Then you have the potential issue that it's not really Kareah and Tefer unless there's a degree of yanking and pulling and almost like quasi-destroying in the process. And then you have the third issue is it really Mechubiach in the first place to even pose a problem? So depending on where you stand in these issues, it's going to impact your diapers and your Band-Aids and your Velcros and your zippers and assorted other kinds of shilas. The last issue relating to loss of Kareah and Tefer, I don't know if we'll have a chance to finish it today, but at least we can get started on it, is the issue of stitches. But now we talk about stitches in terms of people, stitching on people. Maybe a person gets cut, gets hurt, and they need stitches on Shabbos. So what is that exactly? What is the status of stitching on Shabbos? So preface it by saying that very often stitching on Shabbos, even if it's aser, will be mutter anyway. It's going to be mutter if it's considered to be a suffix sakana. Right now, we don't have to elaborate again. I think Baruch Hashem, we spoke a lot about the rules of suffix sakana over the last couple of weeks. But suffice it to say, if there's any at all realistic concern, even a very, very small one for a degree of sakana, the issue primarily in stitches could be potential issues of infection, which could, chalila, if not treated properly, could result in sakana. So if there's a concern of pikuach nefesh, then obviously that's going to trump everything. But sometimes you reach a point where maybe it's not pikuach nefesh mamish, not even a suffix of pikuach nefesh mamish. Now you have to really analyze, well, just how bad is this action of doing stitches? is stitching a deraisa in the first place? Is it a deraisa, the rabbanon, is it mutter? What exactly is the status? I mean, it has the same word, stitches, and in Hebrew, not in Hebrew, called tefirot. The question is it the same? So this was a big machlekes poskim, is that, is this even a melacha altogether? That it's so radically different in the sense of that the item that's being done on is not, it's not a piece of material, it's not even two papers at a Rambam, it's human skin. Is there tefirot on skin? Halachically. So, you know, this gets very, very, very shaky because whenever we use the Mishkan as a model, so we have to be careful not to fall into that rut of picking up on the irrelevant characteristics of Mishkan. We've given this example many, many times, even though it's true that the model of all of the Shabbos is the Mishkan, but there are some parts of the Mishkan that are completely irrelevant. There's some parts that are totally tangential to our discussion. Let's say, for example, nobody would say, you're only chayav from Melacha on Shabbos if you do Melacha in a desert, because the Mishkan is in a desert. But if you do Melacha and it's the wintertime and it's cold, it's under 100 degrees, and then there's no Melacha. So that would be pretty silly. Nobody would say, you're only violating Melacha if your name is Bitzala. But if your name doesn't start with a base, so then you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. And again, those are certain things that are just foolish. But there are certain things that are not clear. Are these good mushals? Are these good models? They're not good models. We've given this many, many times as an example. There's a machlekes at Tanoim. Does the malacha of Dish, which sat in Daf Yomi just a couple of days ago, does the malacha of Dish, the malacha of threshing, does it apply to non-gedulei karka, the things that don't grow on the ground? That was the machlekes about the chilosim, et cetera, back earlier in Paraklal Gadol. So that's very tricky, because on the one hand, the Dish of the Mishkan was gedulei karka. On the other hand, is that important? Is that relevant? Or is that almost like a tangential piece of, that's like Betzalel's name? It means that's not really relevant to the discussion. So that was like a Tanoim between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chum, like Rosh Hashanah Paskim. So whenever you look to Mishkan for models, you have to always be very, very weary. Are you picking up on the important parts or not? So this is tricky because here, you know, stitches was not really not going to find discussion in the Gemara about this topic. We've shown it in Shulchan Aruch about this. This is something that has been, you know, perfected in later years. I mean, they probably did have some forms of stitching. They did have surgeries. They did have certain kinds of procedures. So again, I'm not the expert in medical history. I don't know, you know, at what point, what kind of stitching they were doing. Probably to some degree, anytime they were doing any kind of surgery, so they were doing some kind of stitching. You know, you could discuss, check the medical history books, and Chazal do speak about Yotzei Dofen, about doing cesarean sections, and you do not get the impression from the Gemara that every C-section that was done, the mother automatically died. The Gemara discusses the possibility of our coming, yes or no, to bring a korban to Beis HaMikdash based on a C-section. So, I am not at all an expert in the medicine part or in the history part, and definitely not in the combination of the two, but there apparently were certain procedures that were done in the ancient world, and any real surgical procedure is going to require some kind of a closing up. So there was some kind of equivalent to stitches. But again, it's not something that we're going to find Chazal talking about at great length, and we're not going to really find it in Shulchan Aruch explicitly. So this is something that the poskim of the last 50 years have been arguing about. Is it really considered to be deraisa or not? Again, most of the time it may not be relevant because we assume no one's going for voluntary stitching and not on Shabbos for sure. And I mean, again, people go for elective procedures that will require stitching, but we would assume those are not taking place in Shabbos. So, you know, the average Chalila, average gash on the head of your little kid ends up in the emergency room on Shabbos. So those will very often be covered by Pikuch Nefesh concerns anyway. But it does raise the question, it raises the potential Shaila, which is it's a very, very real Shaila, about even in a situation where stitching would be permissible based on Pikuch Nefesh, sometimes you have a scenario where, from a pure medical point of view, X amount of stitches are necessary. Let's say to close off the wound properly to avoid infection, the doctor says I can do it with 5 stitches. On the other hand, normal protocol is you don't stop at that point. You do 20 stitches, whatever the number is, because other reasons, for cosmetic reasons, whatever the other concerns are, but they may not be pikuach nefesh per se. So that puts you into a now potential shaila. How serious of an issue is stitching in the first place? And if the answer is a very, very serious issue, so then we have to have a very, very serious reason to permit it. We can't just take that cavalier attitude, well, we need stitches, therefore it's mutter. The answer may be it's mutter. And I think the mikveh, then the answer is it is mutter, even to do some of those quote-unquote extra stitches. But we have to have some kind of a halachic formulation as to why that's so. We cannot just take the attitude that, well, the, you know, you know, we want to do it, so therefore it's mutter. It has to, we have to meet the halachic criteria why it should be mutter. If it is mutter, we have to open up in that discussion. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach had a very, very serious discussion about this, and he actually came up with two possible reasons why he felt that it was mutter. So again, I think that Mikra Din, anyone wants to rely on Rav Shlomo Zalman, has every right to do so. And I think that's generally with the practices today. People, when they end up in the emergency room on Shabbos, so they don't sit and count the stitches. I think that there was no hate to be making on the Shaila, but it's important for us to understand what the rationale is, what the background is, not to take the attitude that Shabbos is not a free-for-all. So we have to understand what the background of that particular Pesach of Shlomo Zalman was. So there happened to be actually two parts of that Pesach of Shlomo Zalman, two distinct lines of reasoning. Each one is fascinating in and of itself. Each one is potentially controversial. There are those who disagree with one, with the other, both. So, but again, it's important for us to understand the reason of Rav Shlomo Zalman, and each one is really a very, very fascinating. You see the real mind of a gadol at work to come up with an idea, to come up with a tremendous understanding of the intricacies of the halacha, to be able to apply areas of halacha, not per se, even related to this topic, to be able to come up with this idea why it should be permissible. So I think we'll have to stop for now, but again, I'll permit to show the next year. So we'll try to just pick up this last Nekudah Shlomo Zalman. It's a fascinating tshuva. And then hopefully, I think we'll be able to, I can't say we make a siyum on Karei HaTorah yet, but we'll be able to go down a little bit of a different route. Some of the other issues relating to Karei and Tofer as well, the issues of Karei Shalom and Aslitfor, of Mekalkel, you know, doing destructive ripping versus constructive ripping, which touches on so many different issues. Issues of ripping toilet paper and touches on packages and a lot of things become relevant to how exactly a mag does some of the intricacies of this malacha, particularly the malacha of Karei. Hopefully, Hashem will continue with that point. Just in terms of the schedule for now, so tonight we begin the series of special shiurim, the pre-Shavuos series. So I think the Maram Kamas, hopefully, they were not given out yet. Hopefully, they will be given out, whatever it is.
Yeah, they were in the Shabbat announcements.
Okay, great one. Okay, anyone has any questions? I'll be in touch with Jude or with Henry in terms of the Maram Kamas.
To me?
Yeah, I'll send it.
What we're going to try to do is, as we said, we're going to try to have at the end of each of the Shurim a little bit of Dibri Chizuk, a little bit of Dibri Yisairus as well, just to get us into the proper spirits of things. So we're starting tonight at what time is Rami again? It's
9:15.
9:15, okay, good. Okay.
Judah, we're gonna send out a longer email with the sponsors also at some point today, so we can We'll flip that around.
Just do me a favor, Phil, before you send it out, just check one thing with me, because I may want to add like a slight addendum to add a little bit something in terms of the Makara. So before we drive everyone crazy 100 times, let me know, okay?
Ravi, can you shut off the recording? I have a question.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, one second. You're saying changing the current
Maram Kamas? No. Let me just get off the recording. Hold on.